From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. It's Monday, and that means it's politics as usual. We've got a whole range of subjects to go through. Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson, of course, in hot water for helping hush up the arrest of a principal charged with domestic assault. And the Democrats in Boston today are accusing Mitt Romney of being a tax dodger. That is happening just as President Obama is calling again for extending middle-class tax cuts. Who thinks that's a coincidence? All right, joining me for that and more are Rob Eno, who's a writer for the blog Red Mask Group, and David Bernstein from the Boston Phoenix. And I have to say, this Carol Johnson headline yesterday in the Boston Globe really took me. I mean, I was away all week. Then I came back and I read that and I thought, oh, this is outrageous. This is crazy. And then I went into my 24-hour recovery mode. And I thought, you know, I don't know if it was really that bad. I mean, did she have to, you know, call the Boston Globe and tell them about it when it happened? I mean, I don't know.
Well, it does say here that she didn't place the guy on leave or didn't notify the school district attorneys. And I think that's – you know, one of the things in Boston that's always been weird to me is there's no elected school board.
So no, the only there used person, to be. I can't believe you just brought that up. That used the worst situation.
No, but I mean she's only accountable to one person, to Mayor Menino. If there was an elected school board, you know, parents would be represented and things like that would happen. I think elected school boards are good things in local control. And not just
you haven't been here forever. Do you remember those days, the elected school board?
Oh yeah, and believe me, that this comes
ugly.
Up every single election that the school committee issue. And you know, there are reasons, there are positive reasons to bring it back. There are very good reasons why we got rid of it.
Should we elect judges too, Rob?
I actually don't think we should elect judges, but I don't think we should appoint them to life terms. Mm. I think that there should be a review process.
I think that Rob is right that Carol Johnson is answerable to one person, and that one person, Tom Menino, tends to run a very I don't want to say secretive, but it's a closed shop. It's it's a need to know basis for everybody in the city on anything that happens, and so this may be an indication that this may be part of that.
Well, I mean, people are comparing it to the pedophile priest situation, saying that she recommended him for a job outside of this school district without mentioning the fact that he had been charged with domestic abuse.
I don't see, there's obviously a big difference between a domestic abuse charge, which is very serious and, needs to be dealt with seriously. But that's very different from something where you're talking about children who would be in his care being put in danger with him, but it is a serious thing. It is it certainly raises questions about who, where information about teachers and faculty and so forth. I mean, this is a guy who was developing a very good reputation at a very tough and a very important school.
Rodney Peterson was his name.
Yeah, Rodney Peterson, who's the headmaster at the O'Brien School, was excuse me, so that may have been part of it, that he had a good reputation and people were very happy with his work, and what he had done, and thought that this was maybe a sort of a separate thing that they dealt with sort of in a separate, way without necessarily ending his career. But it certainly raises questions about, people need to know about these kinds of serious.
Will another shoe drop on this? Things. Will this cost Carol Johnson her job?
I don't think so. I mean, unless Mayor Menino wants Carol Johnson to go. I mean, if he likes what she's doing. But more on what David was saying, these things that we don't even know, was it a one-time occurrence? It's never something that you want to have happen. But if it's a one-time occurrence, the guy got mad, he was drinking, he was doing something like that, that's a heck of a lot different than a years and years and years and years of
It just seems
something.
Like Carol Johnson has been on thin ice in recent
I think that's when
months,
and
this could be just the thing to push
right.
Her over
the edge. When you talk about her keeping her job, obviously the only one that ultimately matters is Menino, and he's been happy with her and defended her against all comers. But you do have a lot of people who have wanted to get rid of her, or thought that she, at least needs some serious review about whether she deserves to be there, who may be more apt to speak up publicly because of this, may use this as an opportunity to be more public about raising questions about her. We'll see. I don't know that we've really seen a swarm of, you know, important, influential people in the city using this as that excuse to go on the attack against her yet. So until we see that, I don't think we're likely to see
Speaking
very much.
Speaking of hot water and domestic violence, State Rep Carlos Enriquez, who I fully confess I was not familiar with. He was arrested over the weekend, charged with domestic assault. Apparently his girlfriend and he were in a car and there was some kind of an incident. He had a zip car, actually. It was 4:30 a.m. That says a lot right there. Anyway, she jumped out of the car and contacted a Northeastern security cop. And now he's arraigned this morning on domestic violence or disturbing the peace.
Kidnapping.
You know, because he wouldn't let her get out of the car when she wanted to. So that's not going to be a good situation.
It's not a good situation. But again, you know, if he's found guilty, if he did these things and a court of law finds him guilty, I think he should resign. But until that time, I mean, I'm someone that believes in letting the process come out. Is it a lapse in judgment being out at 4:30 a.m. when you're an elected state representative? My mother always told me that nothing good happens after midnight. So, you know, that might have been a lack of judgment. Although on Friday I was out after midnight. So
you were. Are you an elected official?
I am not an elected official. But that's what it is. And I think that, you know, it needs to play out. And nobody's seen the arrest report. Nobody's seen anything like that. It's still very fresh.
It's just coming out. I'm looking for it on Boston.com, but it hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, I know Carlos a little bit. I've covered him for some time. I talked to him a number of times, this is not the kind of issue where you say, geez, I should have known this or shouldn't have known it, or it seems odd or not. You know, you don't know what a guy does in private and that kind of thing. So, he certainly has never, struck me as someone who, was likely to be, throwing punches. But you never know what the story is.
His friends and supporters said it was totally out of character.
Absolutely. And I would say it's totally out of character from what I know him, but I don't know him that well. I'm just saying I do know him. I think he's been a very hardworking and very, quite well-respected representative in the short time that he's been there. He had previously run for city council as well, so I covered him in that. This is the kind of thing, like Rob said, we got to wait for facts to come in. We haven't heard his side of the story at all. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe he comes out and says, hey, I was in bed. Someone, a friend of mine woke me up to come help her out from trouble. Mm-hmm. And,
Tim Murray, grade two.
Well, this is exactly what I'm saying. It did remind me of Tim Murray of it's very hard to start explaining why you were in a situation like this, and
when the hour of day is so,
and often you start, what you find in this is that you start telling not the whole truth because you're not real happy about telling the full truth, and then people start to fill in whatever they want about that doesn't make sense. So what is the real truth?
I mean,
it's a very disturbing charge. Obviously, it's something that is going to have to be. I think his initial responses and how he handles it, we haven't seen yet, and we're going to have to see that and go from there.
From a political aspect, the question that I had wanted to answer, is Rob Fortas in that district? Does he live in that district? Do you know? Is that
who's that?
That's a good question. He's run for
Boston City Council. He's a Republican. Yeah. He's an African-American Republican, longstanding ties to the community.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I followed him a little in his candidacy. I'm not sure if he's in that district. Barry Lawton is in that district, who was run before in city council. One of the big questions is, we're obviously past the time of anyone getting onto the ballot. The question is, does Enriquez end up, stepping down?
Well, it depends on whether he's convicted.
Well, and it may depend on what the circumstances are. If he knows that this is, if he talks to people privately and they say, the circumstances are this bad, he may end up stepping down. But you may also have a situation where he's trying to deal with it and you have someone like a Barry Lawton or someone else running a write-in in the primary to get on the ballot.
Speaking of Tim Murray, who you just brought up, I'm talking to Rob Eno from Red Mass Group and Dave Bernstein from the Boston Phoenix. The Globe had that piece last Friday talking about his fundraising just plummeting ever since that car accident last November, early November. And he said he was out looking at storm damage from the October 31st ice storm. And it was 5 in the morning as well. And nobody ever really believed what happened because the car was totaled and he shifted stories a couple times. But anyway, and then he had the problem with the Chelsea Housing Authority, the friendship, you know, the 90 phone calls inside of, you know, less than a year. It was crazy stuff. Anyway, do you think he's all done?
I think he's pretty much all done. I think he has to, you know, like some of the people on Beacon Hill, other people on Beacon Hill, the probation's, you know, grand jury's still going on. I think he's got to worry about this McLaughlin grand jury because there's people talking. And, you know, I grew up in Lowell, so I have people that are in that, Republicans and Democratic friends up in that area. And McLaughlin's just someone that senses someone that he can use.
He was the Chelsea Housing Authority.
He was the Chelsea Housing Authority guy, and he just used them. He was, as the public employee, he was the head in fundraising for Tim Murray's lieutenant gubernatorial campaign. I mean, it's interesting when you look at the donations and who's got jobs and who's got other things. There's some stuff there. And does it rise to the level of the probation scandal? I don't know. But
I mean, clearly,
Tim
Murray was
there.
Hoping to be able to run for governor. But if his fundraising numbers are that low and the negative publicity continues.
Yeah, he has not gone out trying to raise money, essentially. You know, he's done a little bit here and there, but he's a prodigious fundraiser in the past, you know, and can be again. He is clearly, you know, and this is something I've followed. You know, I follow all this, you know, fundraising stuff pretty closely. And
there's a lot of that this weekend too.
Oh yeah, and he is not essentially what it appears to me, and it has for some time, is that he doesn't want to go doing his asks. You know, until after
the grand jury.
Until after things are more settled, particularly, like you said, with the grand jury, with the Michael McLaughlin issue, because there's too many people out there who have been supporters of him, would be supporters of him, who are just not going to be comfortable, writing him a check until they know that there's not another shoe to drop. And so he doesn't want to start doing the asks and not getting the yes answers, you know, and looking bad that way. So he's, I think, sort of letting his contributors off the hook by not raising money in a sense. The question is, do things clear up to the extent that he can go out there? He's got a very strong network of supporters, sort of institutional supporters, mayors and other people at the city level and community level. He's got the apparent still, you know, loyal support of Governor Deval Patrick, which says an awful lot in terms
yes,
of, you know, which means an awful lot if he does run for governor. And frankly, it's very interesting to me. Within the sort of 128 circle, everybody thinks that he's done, that he's a political dead man walking. When you get out, you know, Worcester and beyond, you know,
right.
sort of outside 495,
popular.
Very popular. And there's sort of an assumption that, oh, yeah, he's going to be the next governor.
Right.
So we'll see. I think that it's very tough for him. But
all right.
Too soon to tell.
Speaking of governor, our current one signed the $32.3 billion budget over the weekend, up 3% from last year. Not controversial, really. The only thing that I think might have even taken some people by surprise was the veto on the EBT reforms, bans on spending money, you know, that you can't use EBT cards for things like manicures, guns, alcohol. Here's what the governor had to say about that.
I'm not going to do anything that makes vulnerable people beg for their benefits. This notion of humiliating poor people has got to be separated from how we make a program, and frankly, separated and disposed of from how we make a program work and work well and with integrity.
I don't see how it's humiliating poor people to say that they can't cash out the card and go buy alcohol, guns, you know, tobacco. I mean, that would be the only part of it that it seemed to me common sense, that you can't just take an EBT card, go to a grocery store or a bank or something, cash it out. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I'm not sure I completely agree with you on that, because there are things that you need cash for, or that it's easier to have cash for, and so people want to convert that into cash. But this is an issue where most people agree on a lot of the changes, and it's really a small part of the changes that a lot of people disagree on. And I think that what he's doing, frankly, to a certain extent, is vetoing the whole thing. You know, he sort of has a position where he can say, you know, I'm vetoing this because I only agree with portions of it and not the whole thing. And then he comes out and makes a statement, a very controversial statement, like the one he just made that you just played, and that puts all the interest on the budget on that one particular thing, where people – where it's probably bad for him in public relations, but everyone knows where they stand on that one. You know, that sort of play that's already baked in the cake. And now no one's paying attention to any of the other things in the budget because this one's going to take all the Oscar.
I mean, that's the thing that I like to focus on. Like you said, I don't know why – I don't know if I want to say shame, but there should be some – you should feel bad that you're using someone else's money to buy things.
Yeah.
And because if you don't, then you're never going to want to get yourself off of it. I mean, it's just a human nature thing. On the EBT thing, one of the things that he said was, well, we can't, you know, stop buying just jewelry. It's hard to do just not to buy jewelry at a Target or something like that. That was one of the reforms that was in there. Well, the Target computers and the Walmart computers are already all programmed that you can't buy laundry detergent with your food stamp card, you know, and it's all the same card. So that
you can't.
No,
that
you can't.
Crazy.
No, you can't. You can't. You can buy food with your food stamp card, and it's already programmed that this does with food stamps. If you look at your receipt when you go to the grocery store, a lot of times it'll say this was food stamp eligible on the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But on the rest of the budget, the other one was this immigration, which was a no-nonsense immigration reform thing, I thought, that you had to prove that you were in the country legally to get a license. I mean, it seems no-nonsense to me to have that, and he vetoed that.
He's been against that all along.
Well, he's been against that all along, but he's vetoed that. And the other thing was sending it back with we just did a $32.5 billion budget, and he sends back $70 million more in spending on the first day, and that the budget was set up with $700 million in supposed savings in healthcare that nobody knows if are going to come in. So, you know, I love that these budgets always come out at 32.5, and then, you know, we get another $1 to $2 billion in spending over the course of the year. And then they can only say, well, we only grew the size of government by 4%. And then they
dipped into
forget.
The rainy day fund.
Yeah, dipped into that. That was, I found, if you remember the first day of the session, they had the three indicted speakers and now three convicted speakers up, and they're doing them. And Andrew's, it's Anthony Scotcha out of Roslindale, gets up and says, and Tommy Finneran brought us the rainy day, you know, what we call the slush fund. I mean, he just gets up on the floor of the House and calls it a slush fund because that's, you know, what it pretty much is. So they dipped into the slush fund to pay for some stuff. It's absolutely – that's the part that I you know, and I give my Republican friends a lot of heat because they voted for it. In overwhelming, almost 90% numbers. So,
well, it was a compromise budget, and it, you know, it was a very tough budget year. I think it was really sort of underappreciated because the economy has really been improving here in Massachusetts. So we don't sort of talk about the, you know, that stuff as much anymore. And there hasn't been that much focus on the budget this year. But the after effects of the recession on the state government. Including the, you know, the cutoffs from federal funding, as well as the continued. I mean, certainly the tax receipts are recovering significantly. Plus, we got a nice big, you know, boost out of the last lottery year because we had some big pots, you know. But it was a very tough. You know, this is really, I think, going to be the last of the really, really bad budget.
Yeah.
So it was a very big
lottery license money too.
Yeah,
depends on what the national economy.
So now there's
doing.
All the speculation that Governor Patrick is going to become the next Attorney General when Eric Holder steps down. Personally, I'm not buying it. He said he was going to stay here. I really believe he will.
He said he was going to stay here. He said my favorite thing was when he went to Iowa. A couple weeks ago, the local press asked him, are you going to run for president? Because we ask everybody. And he said, no, but everybody says no, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, so he's playing that little dance. I mean, I could see him, if Barack Obama wins another term, going to become the attorney general. I mean, that's how he's made his money in the past, is he's been, you know, in government and then regulated people and then gone and helped those people get out of it. Ameriquest, all those types of things.
Yeah, my guess is that he wants to – that his plan is finish the term – and then go into, you know, I think that he has does not have a specific idea for his post gubernatorial life, but I think it does not involve running for another office. I think it does not involve a permanent sort of position in government, you know, like attorney general. I think it involves a variety of things, including some sort of temporary posts, you know.
Media. I can see him doing national media.
I could see him sitting on some boards, setting up a foundation. Yeah. I could see him, you know, the next Simpson-Bowles report might be the Simpson-Patrick report.
That's funny.
But I do think that if the president decides that that's the guy he wants to be the next attorney general, the president can be very persuasive about talking him into it. So I wouldn't put an absolute no on Deval Patrick serving in the administration.
Speaking of the president, he was out-fundraised just over the last couple of months by $35 million by Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney came up with, what, $106 million or something? It's staggering. You said you followed these things very closely. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren raised $8.67. That is just staggering.
A lot of money.
It's staggering. They haven't even started spending it yet.
She actually had a decent burn rate. She put a lot of ads up in the heat of the Cherokee controversy. She had put a lot of ads up to kind of blunt that.
It didn't help. Those were terrible ads.
They've both been spending money to an extent that it's clear that they – neither one of them think that they're going to have any shortage of money. That's what the spending levels show, is that they think that they're going to have lots and lots of money to spend in the fall, which they are. And so the Senate race is going to be, you know, whether or not this, you know, the People's Pact or whatever holds up, keeping the third parties out. Regardless of that, there's going to be tens of millions of dollars of advertising on both sides. It's been a very high draw, high interest race for a number of reasons. I mean, frankly, you see Elizabeth Warren doing national media that the national sort of progressive community watches, you know, the MSNBC shows and so forth, than you see her doing any local
media. No, we've talked about that before. In fact, we've warned about that before. She just dismisses the local media.
Right. No, she's not
raising a lot of money from the local media appearances.
What she wants to do is raise money off of the national appearances. And hopefully, you know, from my perspective, hopefully she'll start doing a lot more local media down the line. As far as the national, I don't think it's surprising. It's very impressive, but I don't think it's very surprising that the big Republican donors have come around to Romney. It was actually – to me, pretty remarkable about how reluctant they were to get on board with him during the primary, not terribly surprising that they would get on board with him now that he's the clear
nominee. What John Boehner said over the weekend, though, he said, people are going to be going to the polls. This is how Speaker John Boehner says, it's not about electing Mitt Romney, it's about voting against President Obama.
Mitt Romney's own campaign stump speech basically says that. He says that it's a choice between the America you want, the America you don't want. I think that they know. Referendum. This is a referendum election. It's like the 1980 election. It's a referendum election. It's, do you believe that Barack Obama has made your life better, or do you not? Are you better off?
There's no question that both sides are trying to argue. You know, to do the framing over that exact question. That the Romney folks, and this is, you know, like you say, every time that you have an incumbent running for re-election, you know, that this is exactly what happens. The challenger wants it to be a referendum on the incumbent. And that's how the Romney folks are trying to frame it, and that's how Boehner was trying to frame it. And the incumbent tries to frame it as a choice between what you have and the real other candidate and what he would be. That's a framing issue, and that's something that clearly the Obama people have been trying very, very hard for, you know, since long before Romney was clearly the nominee. They were trying to do that framing, and they will try to continue that framing. I think in the end, it is more about a referendum on Obama than it is on that choice. But in a close election, if it ends up being a close election, then the extent to which they can frame it as a choice is going to matter.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm talking to David Bernstein from the Boston Phoenix and Rob Eno, co-founder of Red Mass Group. Well, just on the jobs numbers that came out, Rob, on Friday, I mean, 80,000, everybody said that was pathetic, and, you know, 200 would be good, or at least on the road to recovery. 80,000 is extremely weak. So today, President Obama is pushing his tax cuts for people making $250,000 or less. I thought that argument had gone away, but it's back. It's back. I mean, does anybody really care? I mean, the people making $250,000 or less obviously do, but then do the people above that care if they get it or not?
I think some of them do. I don't know if I think it depends on – I think it really depends on how you make your money. If you're a small business owner that's putting more money in and you're trying to make more money, I think you do. If you're someone that's, you know, an actor or something like that that's kind of making money off residuals and things like that. Maybe you don't. But, I mean, I think it takes 120,000 jobs just to keep pace with the people that die and come into the workforce, need to be created. And, you know, we're 40,000 under that. And that jobs number, if you look at the people that aren't looking for work, it's really 16, 17, 18% unemployment.
Well, that's not counting my daughter who's been unemployed for a while.
No, that number, the secondary number has come down quite a bit, but it has also stalled. And you know, what we would expect actually is that secondary number would decrease as people flood back, you know, as the economy improves and they come back looking for jobs, people who had dropped out, and that actually ends up holding up the primary unemployment number because you've got more people in the workforce. But the hiring numbers have turned quite bad. And it's very discouraging and very disturbing in terms of, you know, we do need those numbers to be considerably higher to avoid, you know, if the recession is going to pick up steam, I mean, the recovery is going to pick up steam, that number needs to pick up. And it's very disturbing that it hasn't.
Well, June and July, aren't they traditionally slow months for hiring?
It's been over and over again.
This has been a disturbing stall. What I would say, especially in terms of the politics of this, is that there seems to be, in my opinion, at this snapshot of time, a bigger divide right now between those whose households are directly affected by unemployment or underemployment and those that aren't. And those that aren't are actually doing all right because there's layoffs are way down. The new jobless claims have been very good, very under control, and dropping for a while now. So the layoffs problem is gone. Income is actually on the rise finally. We've just had some good numbers on that. We've had some good numbers on what consumers are doing, consumer activity, including a very good number just recently on car purchasing.
Yeah, that's true.
So consumers are feeling better about things, feeling better about their, you know, that they're going to be able to keep their jobs. And so politically, for now, they're actually trending a little bit more positive, but there's a big divide, you know, between them and the people who are unemployed.
We've got the Democrats in Boston today trying to portray Mitt Romney as a tax dodger, that he's hiding money in the Cayman Islands. He'll only released 1 year of his income tax returns. And we had those pictures of him jetting around on speedboats this past week. And it looks like they're going to change the top commando in the communications office to shuttle Eric Fernstrom aside and put in Kevin Madden, who was with Romney the last time around. What do you make of that, Rob?
Well, you know, I think Fernstrom knows how to run a race in Massachusetts very well. He's, you know, behind Scott Brown, was behind Romney, and he had some issues nationally last time. I like Eric. And, you know, it's just a different thing. It's a different pool. What works in Massachusetts doesn't necessarily work nationally. And I think the biggest flub was the
Edge-a-sketch.
Except for the Edge-a-sketch, yeah. Is it a tax? Is it not a tax? Yeah. And I think that Romney just needs to get more aggressive. I think one of my criticisms of him I was a Newt supporter during the primary, but one of my criticisms of him and why I like Newt is he just doesn't come across as a fighter, somebody that – and if this is really an election about what Barack Obama has done or what he hasn't done, somebody needs to make that point. What I like that Newt had said and I wish Romney would do is just show up everywhere the president is and then have a press conference a little bit later in the day to talk about – to rebut what the president said.
Well, one of the things that's going on, in my opinion, with the Romney camp is a divide, a problem of sorts between the Romney camp and the National Republican Party.
Yeah.
And there's always been a real distrust there. He's not sort of one of them. You know, the Haley Barbers of the world, you know, don't trust Mitt Romney. And frankly, you know, they think that he's in for him and his people, which is not a bad thing, frankly. But, you know, part of that, I mean, it's from things as little as, is he going to put my people, you know, give my people jobs in the next, you know, RNC, you know, up to much bigger things. And there's also a big divide between how Mitt Romney wants to run his election, which is very much geared towards sort of that middle America, you know, those few persuadable voters, and the way that most of the Republicans want to run their campaigns, which is much farther to the right. And I think we saw this in the Is It a Tax thing, where, frankly, I think the Romney people did not want to have that fight and did not want to go there and have that debate because they think that's a big distraction. Mm-hmm. But the John Boehner folks came out immediately, you know, and yep. Mr. McConnell.
Well, he didn't want to call it a tax because he didn't want to call the one in Massachusetts a tax.
And it's a tax. If it's yeah. on my tax form, it's a tax. I'm sorry.
Regardless, Mitt Romney doesn't want that to be a debate.
Doesn't Mitt need a softer touch, though? I mean, Eric Burns, I like him too, but I mean, he's an iron fist.
I think from that perspective, yes, but Mitt himself, I don't think is. I think Mitt himself doesn't fight. You know, I think that's what I'd like to see from him is he's a manager. He's someone that he's a very steady hand. He knows what he's doing. And people have said in private that he fights, but I mean, he's not someone that in a public face is a very combative type of person. And I think that to beat Barack Obama, you need to fire up the base and get them ready to march behind you. And unfortunately, I don't think we've seen that yet. And I don't know if, you know, him being the vessel is going to carry him. I think that there needs to be some people that vote for Mitt Romney.
You know, I'm not sure people feel the outrage about Swiss bank accounts and lots of money and jet skis and speedboats. I mean, you know, a lot of times that is the image of stars and, you know, celebrity and rich politicians. It's like, I don't know if it really bothers people that much. And the Democrats are trying to portray him as elitist and out of touch. But I'm not sure people are more envious. Gee, I wish I had a ride in that boat.
I think that there is a lot to that. And frankly, jet skiing, on a lake in New Hampshire, you know, that's not just a rich people's thing, I don't have a problem with that, certainly. And I think that you're right. I do think that, again, if we end up with a very close election at the end, where people, where it matters about those people who are making that choice at the end between the two, you know, saying, well, I'm a little disappointed with Obama, but is this guy really going to be better? I think that it could add up to, you know, there is a lot about Mitt Romney that makes people think this guy doesn't really get people in my situation. So is he really going to look after my interests? You know, so, you know, it's just it could add up to one reason why people don't decide to make the switch in the end. I think you're right. I don't think it's like people are walking around today thinking, oh, my God.
Outrageous. Yeah. No.
And you know, the tax dodge thing, I'd say, you know, it's probably legal to put your money outside the country to avoid those sorts of taxes. And maybe it shouldn't be. And maybe we should go to a flat tax and get rid of a lot of the deductions and things like that. But if it's there, that's what people use. I mean, it's quite frankly, the Democrats that have been making those tax code decisions for the past 4 years.
By the way, Rob, were you surprised about all the coverage and kind of heft that Rupert Murdoch's criticism of Mitt Romney got over the weekend? Critical, you know, he was tweeting and all that kind of.
People.
Who cares?
Looking for a fight. Well, you know, everybody, especially in the lefty sphere, thinks that, you know, that everybody seems to think that Rupert Murdoch runs the Republican Party. Does he have dual citizenship? Yeah, I don't know if, you know, I think people think that Rupert Murdoch runs the Republican Party, so they, you know, they think that he's upset.
Does he?
I don't know. I don't think he does.
He thinks he does.
He probably thinks he does. I think more probably Sean Hannity thinks he does.
Were you surprised about that? I mean, it seems like...
You know, guys like Rupert Murdoch get a lot of attention for stuff like that. I don't think it means very much. But, you know, it's the dog days. People are looking for stories. And
yeah, but will the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, you know, go against Romney if Rupert doesn't like him?
Yeah, I don't think that's so much, but they're going to find reasons to be angry at Mitt Romney for not being conservative.
Are they going to go with Gary Johnson?
All right, Rob Eno, David Bernstein, that's going to do it for us. Politics as usual. Rob Eno writes for the blog Red Mass Group. David Bernstein is a political reporter for the Boston Phoenix. Thanks to you both. Economic and political news seem to be one and the same lately, from the latest jobs numbers to campaign finance reform. Kelly Crossley will be talking to Marketplace's Kai Rizdal about those and other economic headlines. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.